please don't do that. I'm joking. I want to share a story with you that is not particularly scary, but just hear me through on this, if you would. When I was in high school, there was the famous, dare I say world-renowned, that's right, world-renowned location, Niles Haunted House. I may have exaggerated. But if you grew up in the Mishawaka, South Bend area, you knew, come Halloween time, October, whatever, the Niles Haunted House was the place to be. It was this enormous old farm property, and they had done the entire grounds so that it was spooky. From the time you get in line and you see that line is 4 miles long and you're scared that you'll never get to the haunted house, to going through the house, to the haunted woods, to the haunted, like, snack stand, to whatever. It was it was all haunted. It was all scary. It was the biggest deal around. Halloween time, you could just hear the buzz, and come October, boom, everybody in school, are you going to Niles? Have you been to Niles? Are you going to Niles? We should go to that. And so I had not been. I knew of it. I had been by it. I had not been to the Niles Haunted House. But a group of me and my friends decided we're going to go. This is it. It's time. Some of them had been before. Some had not. We had a group of guys. We had a group of girls. We said, let's send the girls in front of our group so we can listen to them scream. It'll be fun. And I'm like, all right. I'm not advocating for this. I watched the scary movies, kind of the horror movies. I've seen those. Meh. I've heard scary ghost stories. Meh. I figured the Niles Haunted House. Meh. So I've got my group of friends, and we've got the group of girls, and we honestly did let them lead because chivalry's not yet dead, but it was close that night. And we thought this will just be a great time, right? We got this group. We're at the Niles Haunted House. And we were going through, and they had people jump out of places you didn't know there were places, and it was wonderful. It worked exactly like we hold the group of girls ahead of us. Like, it's happening. Just keep walking. And we came to one part, and I don't know how they did it in this room. They had images spinning clockwise, and they had a bridge that you could walk on that was rotating, you know, wobbling like counterclockwise. It was the most disorienting thing on earth. And long story short, we went through the entire haunted house, and at the end, I almost hate to ruin it because I know some of you are planning on going. But at the very end, they had out back, you come out the back door, like at the far end of this house, a guy with a chainsaw with no chain on it. This is important. And he would usually hide somewhere so that when you're exiting, he'd rear the motor up and come up and run it up your back. This was such a great jump scare for most people. Two things happened. One, at the end of the haunted house, they had a room where the wall moved forward so that as you were walking forward, all of a sudden it closes in and you feel it's really small. And so we're walking through this room and there's creepy stuff. And all of a sudden the wall starts moving. And again, just as designed, the group would go, ah! And I'm standing there like, the wall is moving. Oh, it's fantastic. And I kind of trudge along like I do anyhow. And the wall hits me. And there's this awful noise as their pneumatic system breaks. Not only was I not scared, I ruined it for every other person that was going through that night. I didn't do that on purpose. The second thing that happened was then we exit the now smaller room, and we begin to walk out. And I know what's coming. Most of the other people don't. We turn, and we're going to go as they're directing us. Shriek that just blew out my eardrum. One girl in our group, I thought, had a heart attack, passed out dead, came back to life, screamed so hard. This was the Niles Haunted House. Here's what I remember the Niles Haunted House, all that I shared with you. I remember that it wasn't that scary. But I remember that I have a memory that I'll carry with me for a lifetime. It didn't make, like, an impression on me so much as I can remember that. Okay? Got it? That's what I want to do with scary stories. That's what I want to do with this sermon series. I want to give you something that you can carry with you that you'll remember hopefully for a lifetime. I don't necessarily want to scare anyone. And some of you are thinking right now, Pastor, every time you preach, it's scary. I'm sorry, but that's what I'm going for with this series. And I have this great visual. I love having visuals that are far too small for any of you to actually see, so they're almost useless. But I hold in my hand, powerfully, I hold in my hand, two what? Can you identify what these are? Somebody can identify. What are these? They're pennies. Okay. I hold two pennies in my hands. Look, I can walk them by you, all right? I have this ability. These are actual real-life pennies. Please do not try and steal them from me. They're very valuable, okay? Can anybody tell me what the difference in these pennies are? Yeah. One's left and one's right? Okay, that'll do. How much is this penny worth? Yeah, how much is this penny worth? Great. They're of equal value. What color are they? Yeah. Hey, if I were to give you one of these, like if I were to just give you one of these, there you go, that's yours. And I decided, no, wait, you can have that one. Does that make any difference to you whatsoever? Can I have that back? It's what they paid me this week. They said, make your sermon illustrations better, we'll give you more. For all intents and purposes, these two pennies are the same. Here's what you don't know that I know. One of these was minted in Philadelphia. The other was minted in Denver. Huh. These pennies come from completely different places of birth for them. In fact, almost opposite sides of the country. Well, that's kind of cool, right? Use just the same old penny. No, sir, no, ma'am. These are different pennies minted in different places. Here's the other thing you can't tell. One of these is the old copper-plated zinc. One of these is actually copper. Before a certain date, they made pennies that were copper, and no longer do they do that. So they're not even the same material. Different places of origin, different materials. These pennies are as different as pennies can be. But when you look at them, you can't tell that, can you? Most people would say they're just the same as any other penny. In fact, those two pennies, meh, who cares, right? Hang on to that thought. Hang on to that thought. You can't tell a difference in these two pennies. As far as pennies go, they're as different as can be. Moving on, but you're holding that thought. Don't go to sleep or you'll lose it. Jesus talked about his own scary story. Jesus was the master of telling scary stories. How many of you have read those incredibly frightening and scary and mortifying stories in the Gospels? If you've read the Gospels, you should say yes. Because some of the things that Jesus teaches should scare you to death. It's not necessarily that he says something, you're like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Gospel of Mark is a page-turner. It's the idea of what Jesus teaches. And in Matthew chapter 5, he begins something called the Sermon on the Mount, one of the scariest places in all of the Jesus reading known as the Gospels. Because here's what happens in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus has this crowd, and he's giving a sermon to them. And they're on the side of a hill or, you know, a small mountain, Sermon on the Mount. That's where they get it. Thank you. And he's teaching this incredible crowd. He's giving a sermon to them, and he knows that he has so many people he can teach in a moment that he begins to describe, this is how life should look. Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount, is this is what God intended for life to be like. Almost, you could say, this is what, if God were here on earth, and let's say he had a beard, and he wore a robe with a purple sash, because that's what he always has, right? And his name was Jesus. If that were God on earth, this is how he would live, and so this is how you also should live. And he teaches these crazy sets of teachings. Like he says, you know it's wrong to have an affair. Jesus says that, and I'm paraphrasing. Again, forgive me. Hopefully I don't go to hell for paraphrasing scripture someday. But he says, you know it's wrong to have an affair, but I'm telling you, if you've ever looked at another person lustfully, you're just as guilty. Oh, yeah. That's a teaching they hadn't heard before, and frankly, that should scare you. And he says, you know it's wrong to kill a person. But if you hold anger in your heart towards someone else, you're just as guilty as if you killed them. I'm not making this up. I'm just paraphrasing it. Jesus taught it in the Sermon on the Mount. If that doesn't scare you, he goes on. He says, you have heard, but I tell you this. And you have heard, but I tell you this. And he brings up something that's maybe written in the Old Testament, in the scriptures that they would have known. And he says, but I tell you, and carries it a step further. And Jesus does this, and the crowd sitting there had to be like, I am living life wrong. And that's okay, because Jesus was trying to tell them, here's how you live life right. And he comes to this passage that I want to share with you, from Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 43. And if you have small children with you, this is scary. If you are not prepared and holding on to the front of your pew, please get in the prepared position now. Thank you. It's pretty amazing. You have heard that it was said, so again, Jesus is bringing up, this is something that you may have come across before. This is something that was probably taught to you. This is something you can read in this particular case in the OGOT, the original gangsta Old Testament. You have heard, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, and again, this is not the first series where Jesus has come with, but I tell you, okay? You have heard, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, and somebody in the crowd goes, kill your enemy. Jesus is like, no. But I tell you, Jesus says, love your enemy. Didn't see that one coming, did you? And some of you have read this before, like, I did, Pastor Devin. Pennies for you. Love your neighbor and hate your enemy is what they would have heard. Love your neighbor comes from, I think it's, I took the little note off where that's from. It's either Exodus or Leviticus. It was a teaching. It was a command that they had. Love your neighbor. Hate your enemy was probably, nobody knows exactly where that came from, but it was probably a teaching that the Pharisees over time had gone over and had tried their best to interpret what this might look like, and their logical conclusion was love your neighbor, yes, we're told that and we have it in the law, and hate those that are your enemy, and that's how we should live. That was probably a teaching that they had received, but the love your neighbor part, excuse me, was recorded in scripture. And Jesus says, no, here's how it goes. Again, erase that statement, fill a new statement. I tell you, love your enemy. And pray for those who persecute you. Dang! That's scary. Persecute. We have the most watered down, fluffy white definition of persecution for the church today, because we don't even know what that looks like. We don't have any idea what that is. Persecution, I don't need to go into detail. Living in the time they were living in, though, again, with an invading, occupying government, if you stepped one half step out of line with their rules, you learned fast what persecution was. Okay, let's say people that give you trouble, or even people that would seek to harm you. Jesus says, love your enemy and pray for those that would seek to harm you. And he goes on, verse 45, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. After all, he causes his son, by the way, he causes his son to rise on the evil and the good. And he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Hey, if you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Don't even the sinners do that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing different from anyone else? Don't even the pagans, the non-believers, do that. Be perfect, Jesus says, as your Father in heaven is perfect. And let me help you with that, because that word perfect is just all goofed up in the English language, okay? That translates, be holy, as your Father in heaven is holy. And some of you just said, that doesn't help at all. Holy, coming from the Old Testament, was a word that meant set apart. Because initially, God chose a people. There were people in the world, but God chose a particular group of people. And he said, you are going to be different. You are going to be set apart from the others. You are going to be holy. So I like to use that word in this context, holy, as in set apart, as in you're not going to be like the other people. So if you love only those who love you, and if you love only your own people, how is that different from others? No, God said, be holy, be set apart, be different, as your heavenly Father is holy and set apart and different. Jesus' instruction here should scare us to the core of who we are. Love your enemies. Pray for those that would try and harm you. How many of you, and this is great, I love having the children up front. I love hearing from them. They were so anxious to work like God into an answer. They were already, I got some God in my pocket. Just wait till there's a question. How are you today? God! I love that about children. But listen, I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to try not to give the Sunday school answer, all right? How many of you can think of someone that you would consider an enemy? And you're like, no, I have no enemies. Liars. All right? How many of you can think of somebody that you don't like? We'll make it softer so you can do that. That you don't like. Maybe that doesn't like you. Maybe that sometimes causes a grand, royal, spectacular pain in your day. How many of you can think of someone like that? I have both hands up, guilty. Okay? How many of you have loved that person? Put your hands down. I don't know. It's the toughest thing in the world to do. I don't know why this poor guy, I have serious issues. I'm probably going to need counseling sessions forever and ever. I can think in junior high, this kid, for reasons I have no idea, and I hold this stupid grudge in my heart against him today. I had gotten in junior high, because my parents didn't know any better, a new Colts t-shirt. And I was wearing my new Colts t-shirt, and I sat down in social studies. I remember the class, I remember the seat, I remember everything, and this kid behind me, he gave me crud now and then. I didn't care, I didn't listen to him, I didn't pay attention. I hear him say, watch this, and he's sitting behind me, and he takes his pencil, and he sticks it in my shirt and rips. And I'm like, why? I'm sitting there in class, I'm in junior high, I'm not telling you I was by any means a perfect child, but the thought in my head at that point was, why? What possesses someone to just rip my knee? Oh, it's because it wasn't a Viking shirt. Got it. Now, I couldn't for the life of me figure that out. I didn't do anything. He didn't say anything. The rest of the day, I went on with a ripped shirt. Everybody was like, oh, you wore your sloppy clothes today. Had been brand new. But for the rest of my life, even till today, and I'm preaching to you as the beginning of my therapy this morning, I thought, if I ever see this guy, I'd be like, what you did wasn't nice. Wham! And just knock him out. It just irritated the life out of me with no explanation why someone would do this. And certainly I can give you worse examples of an enemy. But what I'm trying to say to you is we have people that we come across that we think in our heads, I can't stand them. That we treat with our actions like you are an idiot. And that sometimes we talk to with our words, and we do things more fierce than any physical reaction we could ever have. Those people are our enemies. And Jesus didn't say, it's okay, You're going to come across jerks in the world. Sure, I made everybody, but I sprinkled jerks in to make it fun. Jesus didn't say that's all right. Jesus didn't say, you know what you can do? Find those people you don't like, and here's how you handle them. You just ignore them, because they'll go away. Jesus didn't say that. I teach my kids this when they have a real problem. Kids, I'm sorry if I've led you astray. But I tell them if somebody's bothering you, ignore them. And that's what I did to that kid in that instance. And maybe that's okay initially, but Jesus says it's not good enough to ignore them. It's not good enough to be angry with them internally. And he addressed that in an earlier saying. Jesus says, love your enemy. Love them. And that is some scary, frightening, difficult stuff. And then again, think of somebody that actively tries to hurt you. Think of somebody that tries to ruin your reputation with their words. Think of somebody that, for whatever reason, wants to physically hurt you. Think of somebody that wants to do damage to your property. Jesus says, get even with them. I'm telling you, go and hurt them somehow. If they're after you, beat them to the punch. Then once they're down, kick them while they're down. Words of Christ right there. No. Jesus says, pray for them. Can you imagine? Can you imagine somebody that's trying to ruin you in some way, praying for them? God, I'm really frustrated right now, and this person's virtually ruining my life, and they made a threat to me, and I just want you to be with them. Like, you don't have to ask God to bless their activity. God, please help them be successful in destroying me in every way. You don't have to do that. But I think what Jesus is calling us to is to see them as people, also see them as part of his creation. If we practice loving everyone, FYI, and we could get others to practice the same, well, we wouldn't have enemies. And we wouldn't have people that persecute us. If everybody played by these rules and treated others the way they wanted to be treated, this wouldn't happen. And so some of you could very well ask, who are my enemies? Let me ask you, who are your enemies? I can give you examples. I don't know who your enemies are, but you know very well who they are. Maybe it's the people in the LGBTI, other letter community. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but maybe it's people that have a different mindset than you. I'm not saying you have to condone what they're doing, but do you have to treat them as enemies? Man, this is ruining the United Methodist Church right now. Okay, we're coming to a stinking civil war in our denomination over this. And we're looking at other people as though they're our enemies. When in fact, if we're all on Christ's side, then I think there's a greater enemy out there. But do we let people that hold different views and values from us become our enemy and then start spending time and energy in fighting them? Jesus says, love them. You don't have to approve of what they're doing. You don't have to think they're right, but you do have to love them because they're people just the same as your people. So love them. And when they do something nasty in response, when you're trying to love them, pray for them. How about, oh, I know you can't fathom this. In fact, it's just too stupid to even say this. I won't say it. I'm going to say it. I'm a stupid guy. How about in politics? You ever see any divisions? I mean, can you conceive of a place anywhere in the United States where there are political divides? I don't know. Does that happen ever? Yeah. And I am surprised it hasn't happened in Congress that they've taken up arms and fired across at each other. And we get caught up in this too. We have our views. We have our stances. And again, you don't have to say, oh, you know, I change. I agree with the other side. Jesus told me I had to. No. But you have to love the people on the other side. You have to recognize the way that they're seeing it, the way that they're thinking, the way they can best understand it. Their political views are right. You don't have to agree, but you have to love them. And when they do something nasty because you're loving them, they take a cheap shot, maybe they do a mudslinging ad, I know that would never happen either, then you pray for them. What about the family member that's hurt you? What about that friend that stabbed you in the back? What about that person that you could never, ever, 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 ever be friends with because you just can't stand them? You don't have to be friends with them, but you've got to find a way to love them. And when they hurt you again and remind you why you could never be friends with them, then you have to pray for them. Famous pastor said this line, and I think it's so telling. The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried. Jesus' law, that the greatest good you can do and the new command I give you is to love others, it's not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and left untried. Love your enemy. You can love your family. And I hear people all the time talk about how much they love their family. And it's a good thing. I happen to love my family. I happen to love my church family. I happen to love a lot of people. But Jesus said, think about this. What do you gain if you love only those people that love you? How are you different from anyone else? If you do good to those that do good to you, whoop-de-doo! Jesus said that, by the way. He was the first person to use that expression. How are you different from anyone else if you're doing good to people that do good to you and if you're loving the people that love you? Jesus said, you've heard that. I'm telling you, go a step further. Love your enemy. And so here's the secret. Here's the secret. I'm going to let you in on a secret. I won't even charge you for this one. The end of that passage is the key to why we should do this. If we can identify our enemies, if we know what the course of action is, why? Why would we do this? And Jesus said, be, again, let me use the word holy. Be set apart. Be different. As your Father in heaven is different. Jesus says, essentially, be like God. That's the point from the beginning. We were created in the image of God. We were sent in this world to look like God. We were supposed to reflect God to the world. When the nation of Israel was chosen, they were to be God's reflection beaming out to the rest of the world. There's hope, there's a better life, there's difference, and it's found here because we look like the Creator, and the Creator is God. Be like God. Jesus said, do that. Look like God. And if you don't love other people, you don't look like God. And if you can't find in your heart to see your enemy as another person, you don't look like God. If you only love those who love you and you're only good to those who are good to you, you blend in with the crowd. And when the world says, where is God? They will never find it if it's not you. You will be, in effect, either one of these pennies that people look at and they don't know that there's any difference at all. And you can say a prayer before you eat a meal and you can be really great to your children. But listen, unless you're really loving and kind to your enemies when it hurts, when you're scared to death, this is such a radical step. I don't think I can do it. Until you do that, your Christianity reflects this to the world. Society, Christianity. Christianity, society. Faith, no faith. No faith, faith. They're interchangeable. You don't look any different. God's message doesn't get across when you're the same as everyone else. And this is cool. God just wanted to make sure, apparently, that I would preach this morning. And so he said, Devin, I'm going to give you an image. Last night, I was at Eli's band competition in southern Indiana. It was not related at all to my job or anything Christian. I was there to support my son and the Lake Central Band. And I'm sitting there in the audience. This lady behind me is whistling so loud, I was deaf for a half an hour. And so as I'm trying to get my hearing back, wishing she hadn't done that, looking around, I was considering her my enemy, but I was loving her. And I look in front of me. And the lady's shirt, honest to goodness, like I didn't even call her and say, could you wear this so I can use this illustration? The lady's shirt in front of me said, nobody ever made a difference looking like everyone else. And that's the point I want to make. If you want to make a difference in this world, you have to do some radical, scary things. And it's not, well, I'm going to have to just buck up and be radical today. Jesus called you to this. When he taught this crowd on the side of a mountain, this is what life is like. This is what the Creator intended. This is what separates those that follow in my ways from those that don't. One of the very scary things he said was love your enemy. and pray for those that would try and harm you.